Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, in was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said Apfelstrudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. Listen.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo podcast. My name is Philip Musin, and today I'm joined by Per Schneider,
hello,
Jonathan Dornbush,
hey,
and Zachary Ryan. What's up, Zachary Ryan?
Not much. What's up with you?
not much at all. Just nice. Enjoying this relaxing week before the crazy week.
Oh, lucky you, relaxing week.
Huh? Yeah. I personally have a crazy week next week, yeah. But how's everyone else doing?
Good. I was on the Twitter earlier, and I was amazed. There are a couple of people tweeting insane numbers at me, namely their play hours. Like Dank Frank, awesome Twitter name.
Nice. Oh.
He had 955 hours logged in The Legend of Zelda. So I retweeted him and said, can anybody beat this? And yes, Hylian Hero 2, Mark, 1,030 hours in Zelda. He did a screen cap of his playtime record, but even worse or better, 1,165 Splatoon 2 hours.
Wow.
And he says it's mostly Salmon Run. That's insane.
Well, how much time do you think you've put into Zelda? I tried to do some
200,
math.
Probably.
I tried to do some math pretty recently, and I think I'm probably encroaching on 500 hours.
Okay, well, that's...
Because I've completed it on my own. I completed it for Link Together. I did a Master Quest.
Okay.
And then, like, all the DLC. So I think, yeah, I think I'm close to, like 450 or 500.
I'd say I'm, like, a 180, something like that. Yeah. I played the Wii U version a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that nuts? Do you have this much time?
No, definitely not. I mean, I don't think I have 1,000 hours combined in like all of those games put together. So that's, like, that's just crazy.
What do you do with your time, Philip?
I write the news and I make videos.
Write the news.
Yes, or I help with it. But yeah, how's everyone else doing? Jonathan, you doing good?
I'm not relaxed at all. I'm very anxious because I've been playing Celeste all week.
Yes.
And I love it, but oh man,
Celeste,
does that make me feel like a crazy person.
We are all very excited about Celeste, and we're going to be talking a lot more about that in the later half of the show. But first, we have some news coming from the apparently GDC Game Industry Report. Apparently, devs say that games will sell better on Nintendo Switch, or they do sell better on Nintendo Switch than on other platforms. So since launching, so the question that they rose in for this GDC analysis, sort of pre-event type of thing, is since launching your game on Nintendo Switch, how have Switch game sales compared to the average across all platforms you've launched on? Now, 28% of those people who participated in the polls said that Switch sales have been greater than average. Now, that's pretty cool. 23% said Switch sales have been about average. 16% said Switch sales have been less than average. And 33% have said that they've either only launched on Switch or have had other issues. So I think that those are some really, really interesting numbers. Personally, I know we're talking about numbers and numbers aren't a lot of fun, but the Switch is fun. So
it's a great, I mean, it's a great reminder that it is now a vibrant platform. This did not happen with the eShop previously, right? Nintendo has had some rare hits. Like if you remember on the Wii, the World of Goo was a surprise download hit, but that was almost like that was a game Nintendo put so much support behind. Some of these games, there's very little push from Nintendo now, right? Obviously they send out their newsletter and you've got the software rankings and stuff, and yet they're doing really, really well. So it's just a great sign that the platform is alive. People are now getting into the habit of downloading games, buying these games in addition to the big Mario Karts and Splatoons and Zelda. So that's great. My worry still is it's a land grab. The platform is going to get so packed and there's so many games coming out. Some games will suffer, but so far the good games have risen to the top.
I think that Nintendo's done a really good job of putting indies first and foremost in a lot of their marketing. You know, we see things that they wouldn't have done in the previous generation, like an indie specific directs, really highlighting a lot of these games and showing these games off to maybe a percentage of the public that wouldn't have been interested. I think that the Switch's install base is definitely something to comment on in the way that we're probably attracting more people from Steam that can play these games in a portable environment. I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think it's really interesting, you know, that these top couple of statistics here, because you see games like SteamWorld Dig 2 that report things like, oh, we sold more on Switch than we did on Xbox and PlayStation and Steam combined.
Like 10 times more.
It's a perfect platform for that kind of stuff, and I think it's really awesome that at least in this first year they're really cashing in on it.
Jonathan
just wrote an awesome piece about Nindies on Switch.
And that actually it ties in really well to all of that. It's interesting, like there were all those little success stories in the first year of, like you said, SteamWorld or Oceanhorn selling more in its first day than it did on Overcooked was also another big one. Golf Story was exclusive to the system, but also a major success story for them. And it's cool seeing those little, what you may think are little games alongside in a direct, say, Mario Odyssey. Here's also Golf Story. They've done, like you were saying, a really good job of not just Nindie-specific showcases, but putting them in the larger context of, no, these matter to Switch. They are just as big a deal to us, at least on the Nintendo side, as they are our first party release.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, unlike Steam as well, because Steam's actually been having a lot of trouble promoting indie games. There are so many games that come through on Steam, like on a daily basis, that they just get so overshadowed. So like the fact that the eShop is doing so well with promoting these smaller titles is really sort of inviting other indie developers to jump on board. And Nintendo's doing a lot of great things, like with how they have their daily news stories that pop up like on your feed, on your Switch. So little touches like that, I think, are incredibly important to promote and bring awareness to smaller titles like Celeste, for instance, you know, which a lot of people should be playing. But yeah, we did get two other really, really cool Nindie Switch announcements today, actually, or yesterday, I believe. So Dead Cells is one of them.
Yeah.
That game is officially coming to Switch, and I am so, so excited about Dead Cells. Now, Zach, I know you haven't played it, but you did check out some footage of the game running.
Yeah. So to me, it looks more Castlevania than any of the recent Metroidvanias.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's got a very distinct sort of sword and sorcery feel. We're taking a look at it now if you're watching the video version of the show.
So you're watching PC footage, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, you can really tell about all the graphics going on here. But
well, the small icons, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that one of the things that really intrigued me about this is the range of motion for your character. Not unlike the last Metroid game, Samus Returns, I think that there's a lot more stuff going on here than your typical Metroidvania. You can dodge roll, you can get behind enemies, you can use elemental powers to freeze enemies. You're doing things like using swords and whips and all kinds of different stuff.
You've got the get over here move,
right, exactly,
too, right?
The grappling hook, yeah. So it's kind of got like a Symphony of the Night vibe.
But way faster.
Yes. Yeah. And I really hope, just watching it, you know, like in the trailers, whoever's playing is just mowing through enemies.
Oh, that's me. That's my gameplay.
Nicely done. Yeah. Well, yeah. Way to go. That's what they're always saying about Phillips, is he's very good at the video games. I hope that it's really difficult. Like, I really liked, I don't know if you guys ever played Salt and Sanctuary when it came out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it was like a 2D sort of Dark Souls kind of game.
This, to me, from what I've played of it, because I've played both Salt and Sanctuary and this game.
That's the other thing we say about you, is that you play all games.
I play all of them.
Yeah, right.
No, but this, to me, is what I wanted Salt and Sanctuary to be. Because obviously there was so much comparison between Salt and Sanctuary and Dark Souls. But this, to me, feels a lot more like a Dark Souls type game, except done in like a 2D style Metroidvania-esque thing.
Cool.
And it's also procedurally generated, or it has procedurally generated elements to it.
Interesting.
So like there are consistent like levels that you're always going to start in the same area. The second area is always going to be like have that same sort of aesthetic look to it, but the levels inside and like the whole layout will change.
But it's not that hard, right? Like it's not brutally hard. It puts up a challenge.
Bummer.
It does put up a challenge. I wouldn't call it brutally hard, but it's definitely going to be a game that, you know, you're going to die a lot. You're definitely going to need to have some time to figure it out before you can complete it, at least most
people. Is it wrong of me to say that the fact that it is somewhat procedurally generated kind of turns me off?
Yes, I think that's incredibly wrong. No, I'm just kidding.
I think that there's something to be said about careful level design and finding secrets and, you know, like the way that you work through a Castlevania or Metroid game, that really does it for me. That really turns me on in terms of these kinds of games.
You're showing your age. I mean, I perceive an age gap between the kind of predetermined games and the kind of more open procedurally generated games.
Right.
Yeah.
It's hard to be 25.
The kids, the kids love the endless challenge of a game that you can always get back to, and at least portions of the levels, if not the progression,
you're a fellow old. How do you feel about procedurally generated stuff?
So I'm the kind of guy, I love a good open world game, as well, right? Where I can do whatever I want. I love a story and a definite kind of thread I follow. Mm. So I'm less about the games where I go into a dungeon and it's always different. Whether that's in an RPG or in an action game, I prefer that somebody smart thought it all out beforehand, put all the traps, and then I step in them.
Okay. Yeah, I like, there are roguelike games that I've loved. Rogue Legacy always comes to mind. Like, I absolutely love that.
Did you mean Rouge-like?
Rouge-like. But I still do love sort of that manicured, as you were saying, like actual levels made out. That's why I think I'm in love with Celeste so much. I think if Celeste was a procedurally generated, brutal, hardcore platformer, I wouldn't have fallen in love with it as much as I have.
Yep.
But that being said, I think roguelikes can be amazing, and I know that there's a lot of love for Dead Cells in the early access community.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to have that. It'll be launching in the 1.0 version when it launches on Switch, alongside the PC launch of the 1.0 version.
Awesome. Ooh, and we don't have a release date.
No, just sometime this year.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, it's very exciting. Hopefully we get it sooner than later. But another game that was announced alongside Dead Cells is Aegis Defenders. And now this is also a game that's coming from Steam Early Access. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of a different game. It's also got that sort of 2D style, pixel art 16-bit look to it, but it's not a Metroidvania. This is a mix between tower defense and platforming, I guess. Is that what you would call it?
Yeah, well, so it originally started as a Kickstarter back in 2014. I don't know how much like early access they've actually done. I know they've done like beta backers have been testing the game out. And essentially there are these different divisions of the game where you go exploring and you're finding items to build stuff for the tower defense portions of the game, but you're always going out with multiple characters. So local co-op is included in the game and you're allowed to transfer between the characters.
So there's sort of almost like a Battle Chef vibe where you're going out and doing these platforming levels and collecting resources and then taking those resources into a different style of gameplay.
Yeah, it's a little bit like that.
That's really cool. And like, traditionally I'm not a tower defense guy.
Yeah.
But there's something about this that looks charming to me. Like, I watched this trailer earlier today and I was really digging it. I think it's kind of cool that you can take all four of those characters out together and swap between them.
Well, and so we spoke to the developers both as part of this larger piece and the announcement of Aegis Defenders coming to Switch about how in the testing, how they've tweaked the game so much because they noticed people didn't actually like switching as much when they first were making the game. They didn't want to swap between characters. So they've incited
Lost Vikings.
I know. But so they've incited people to do that through like a fusion system where you can only collect specific items by certain characters, so you have to fuse these items together to get better items.
Yeah.
So they've included those options as well. It's really interesting. While we were talking to them, they said a big inspirations for them were Overcooked in terms of that co-op play.
Huh.
As well as Pikmin for sort of this color coded armor system to know sort of what abilities can be used. And then also Persona was an influence because they said what they noticed people were gravitating to were the characters. So now there are branching dialogue trees when you have conversations and they don't change necessarily the nature of the game, but they do let you choose different responses and let you tune the characters to the way you feel they should be played.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's a lot deeper than I think it looks at a first glance. But it was very much inspired. The developers were telling us that, hey, we loved games in the SNES era and we want to make something fresh using that sort of design.
I got Spelunky vibes at first when I saw it, but then you actually watch it for a little longer and you're like, wow, you've got all these kind of tools and it seems like it's a very different game once you play it.
I'm very excited to see, especially it will have local co-op in Switch, so you can each play with one Joy-Con just right out of a single system.
That's awesome.
I think there's a lot of really cool potential for both those games.
I'm really, really excited about both of them too. I think that I don't know, so there's something about Dead Cells that just is really interesting.
You're really
me.
Into that, huh?
I really am. I played a lot of it yesterday. Last night, so much so that I'm just like,
didn't sleep.
Yeah, I didn't get much sleep. But another indie, or on the sort of reign of indie games, since we're on that subject already, apparently the creator of the highly popular mobile game, and also I think it's available on PS4 and PS Vita as well, Downwell, has joined Nintendo. So the game is called Downwell. It's basically, on mobile, it's played in portrait mode. I'm not sure how it's played on PS4. I think on Vita, you can also like turn the Vita sideways and play it. Like
vertical.
That?
Yeah, yeah. So it's essentially a vertical side-scrolling shooter, but you're going down.
So if you've played that game, you probably know exactly what I'm talking about. We have some footage here on screen if you don't.
So you must play it on Switch this way too, right? Vertically?
Well, actually, we don't know for sure if it's coming to Switch.
Is he joining Nintendo or is he making games on Switch?
He's joining Nintendo.
So he's
like hired.
He's
by
got
Nintendo,
a job, right? And he was before this was for Devolver Digital, right? Like, this game was published by Devolver, right?
Yeah. Right.
So that's interesting, right? Like a hardcore indie dev joining the Nintendo team.
Yeah. So there's no official word if Downwell is coming to Switch. I'd be really surprised if it eventually didn't, because I think it's a perfect fit for the console itself, especially if you can play it in portrait mode with touchscreen, controls. So I think it'll be really fun. It's just really cool that Nintendo's getting even more creative minds like that, you know?
Speaking to that indie process, it's really fascinating. Like the lengths to which you're going, this is not a collaboration I would have expected necessarily, but it's really awesome to see him joining Nintendo. And when we were talking to Nintendo for that big Nindies piece that Zach had mentioned, it was kind of like they view these games as so much of a core part of Switch's identity. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're seeing that sort of be built into Nintendo's identity as a whole, sort of like a hire like this.
Yeah, I really appreciate the fact that Nintendo shows like such high value, just as much value in their smaller titles or in indie titles like this as they do in their first party releases. Yeah. So it's really exciting to see that collaboration happening between Nintendo and developers. But another game that came out, is it this week?
Last week.
Last week, yes. Is Kirby Battle Royale on 3DS. And Perry, you've been playing a little bit.
Well, it made me dig out my 3DS.
Yeah.
Which is, it's so weird when you're so used to holding a Switch now and then you go back to the XL.
Yeah.
It seems so small and quaint. And like you see the main menu, you're like, oh God, so many icons. It's like, what?
When it takes a second to load longer than the Switch. Yeah.
So yeah, I played this a bit.
So for those of you that are uninitiated, 100 Kirbys drop out of a plane onto a map.
Wow, that would be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's not a, it's not like PUBG, not that kind of battle royale. Honestly, I mean, I'd describe it as Mario Party Lite.
Really?
Yeah, they're like, they're these kind of almost like one screen or slightly scrolling, battles with, that you can have with your friends. You can play with download play, so you don't have to have the game. You can play online. Kirby Online, look at that. And they're just really kind of like almost, like 2.5D overhead view battles where Kirby, uses his signature move, which is not sucking in people for some odd reason. No, you can use a sword or a bomb or like other upgrades you, you get to, defeat your opponents. And, so it's, from the ground up built as a multiplayer game. Like, to give you an example, like one challenge could be that you're dropped into an arena and there's an apple and you're supposed to, at the end of the timer, hold the apple. You pick up things with R. And so you're fighting, against the AI or your friends with your sword, try to knock them out and then last minute grab that apple. Or you like shake apples from trees. Remember the happy trees mm-hmm. with the noses?
Yes.
And, yeah. And then like try to drop as many into a bucket, like a trap door, and you have to work with your friend together, team versus team. To like collect as many as possible, so it's that kind of stuff. Actually, Bomberman, it feels a little bit like Bomberman,
yeah.
But it's not as good as Bomberman, and you know, it's decent. I
now,
think it's a
is
good
it not
kids
as good
game.
As old Bomberman, or is it not as good as new Bomberman? Because if it's not as good as new Bomberman, we might be in trouble.
Is so it
new, as
Bomberman, good as Bomberman 64?
New Bomberman? New Bomberman keeps on getting better and better,
okay.
Right? So yeah, if you
I haven't kept
checked
up with
in,
Bomberman
yeah, no,
anymore, but.
No, check it. No, it's. I'd say it's not as good as either one of them. It's obviously designed for kids. It's this new crop of 3DS games that are not 3DS mm-hmm. games. No more 3D on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not a game that's taxing the system. It doesn't run amazing.
Is it going to turn anyone into a Kirby fan?
No, because it doesn't quite feel like a Kirby game. It's honestly right. like it's, if you're a Kirby fan, might want to take a look. I think if you have young kids who like playing multiplayer games, this is a good ticket. But for everybody else, it's.
Have you been playing it at all with your kids?
Yeah, I showed it to him. There was not.
And is it a hit at the House of a Thousand Joy-Con or no?
No, the House of a Thousand Joy-Con did reject this game. No, it's all right. Honestly, it's like, think about if Mario Party only had like 10 challenges. There's a little bit of a story mode in mm-hmm. it too, so it's not all multiplayer, but it's all right.
Okay.
It's a small game for $40. I was expecting much more. It's made by Hal, the daddies and moms of Kirby. But it's definitely, you can tell it's kind of like the tail end of the big first party games coming out for the 3DS.
Yeah. You know what they say about a Kirby game when it hits your system.
That's right.
Yeah.
So yes.
We've still got Detective Pikachu on the way though. So
that's true.
For America.
That's right. Yeah. America's still getting that. You know, that I enjoyed that game. That was fun.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
But not triple A amazeball.
You played
like
it?
Yes, I played the Japanese one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I wonder if there are more people just kind of waiting on the, you know, Kirby Switch game, Kirby Star Allies. Like, I wonder if that's sort of where the Kirby fans' hearts are right now in Switch land.
Well, it's certainly, I mean, this game makes it abundantly clear if you want that classic style Kirby game, you know, the next big one is on Switch. This is this is a side game. This is a battle game.
Okay. Pick up Planet Robobot.
Robobot was a really good one. Yeah I like that one a lot. So, yeah. So, I mean, for $40, buy four indies on Switch instead.
It's $40.
If you have a Switch.
It's
$40.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
I
didn't realize it was a full price game.
There's a bunch of cool, like, collection stuff in there. So it's not quite as bare bones as that makes it sound, and some mm-hmm. hidden challenges and stuff you can unlock. But, you know, obviously online
plays. Does Kirby wear any nice hats?
Hmm?
Does he wear any nice hats?
There are lots of hats. Yeah.
That's
you start off as Kirby with a Link hat and the sword. And
okay.
Mm-hmm. You unlock many new powers. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So hat enthusiasts.
It's really good for people who are into hats.
Cappy fans.
Yeah, right. Thank you for reminding me on that. Yeah, I forgot to mention that again. It's right. very good for hat fans.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We got a real hat initiative going on over here these days.
It's a good week for Kirby fans out there.
Is it?
I guess
I'm completely honest. It sounds like it might be an okay week.
It's okay. If I had to rate it, it'd be a six.
Okay.
So far.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
What score do we give it?
I don't know if we reviewed it. It might be too small.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it also that's came out in Europe a while back.
Right.
It did come out last year
that's
already.
That's a whole other continent.
Yeah.
So it just came out in the U.S.
Yep.
It's a shame we can never
before
get
we move on to our next topic, I wanted to ask you a quick question.
Absolutely.
And forgive me if I'm just forgetting here, but did we talk about Night in the Woods coming to Switch?
No.
Did you know that Night in the Woods is coming to Switch on February?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I'm very excited for Night in the Woods to come to Switch. I think it's probably one of the most unique and real storytelling experiences that I've played in the last handful of years.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think the Switch is a perfect platform for it. Jonathan, I know you're a big Night in the Woods fan.
It was a game that a couple people in the office kept telling me to play, and I was like, I'll get to it. And then it was on sale on the PSN, so I downloaded it in like the last week of the year, and it instantly jumped into my top 10 for the year.
Okay.
It's like you were saying, there is dialogue in that game that is so cutting and so true to life that I was like, how does this game know what I was thinking?
Right.
Like, it is incredible, the dialogue in that game. So it's also just so charming.
Did either of you get a chance to play it last
Not
year?
Yet. I don't know too much about it.
So Night in the Woods is...
Chloe has been singing its praises,
Night in the Woods is the tale of a town full of anthropomorphic animals, and you play a college student that returns home. At first, you don't know why you've dropped out and like come back to school, but you basically just have these like normal everyday sorts of tasks that you go through. You know, like you're in a band, so there's like a little rhythm game. There's a really funny scene where you like break a bunch of light bulbs.
Yeah.
And it's just this really charming but also like very real and sort of heavy story, kind of complemented by this like awesome paper cutout art style. And I'm sorry that I didn't put this on the run of show beforehand so we could have thrown some video in here. But I wanted to make sure that we covered it on this show because it hasn't been on a Nintendo platform yet. It is coming really soon, and I think it's something that our audience might be really into.
So, yep.
And the edition coming is they updated the version on other platforms. It's called the Weird Autumn Edition.
Nice.
It's sort of like a director's cut of the game where I think they have commentary in there and a few little extra scenes and stuff. It is well worth playing, especially if you love.
Definitely going to play.
Yeah, one of the characters, Greg, is one of the funniest characters I've ever seen in any video game ever. I love him. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, very cool. Yeah. Thanks for the heads up.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail us. I just wanted to put that out there.
That's all right.
And when's that coming out? February 1st?
February 1st.
Cool.
Yeah, right around the corner.
Nice. Awesome. Keep your eyes out for that one. Definitely. But on to some sadder news, I guess, for
Indeed. The
like five people still using it. But Nintendo is apparently shutting down Miitomo. And Miitomo, if you aren't aware of it, is the app on smartphones that people have been using to essentially like communicate with each other through Miis and stuff like that.
Yep.
Yeah. So did you guys ever like get into Miitomo?
First week.
Yeah. I was going to say, as I have been with most of Nintendo's mobile offerings, I was very into Miitomo for about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was mostly really fun to take your little me head and put it on different bodies and situations. You know, Andrew Goldfarb, had many, many photos of the Final Fantasy 15 characters with our heads attached to them because when that game launched, we were on a trip to Japan for Final Fantasy 15. And I will always remember Miitomo for him showing those photos to the Final Fantasy 15 designers and them just being completely flabbergasted by it. So, just, I don't know why this weird American is showing us these like hodgepodge photos, but sure, why not?
Yeah,
he was very excited.
He was very excited.
Miitomo, I actually, you know, I dropped super fast on this one.
Yeah, me too.
And faster than on the other Nintendo.
Such a weird offering for their first like big mobile outing.
Well, it feels like it was supposed to be almost the nexus of the mobile outing,
yes,
that they would tie everything to, and you could go back to it like based on the currency you would earn and be able to get more in-game items there, and it would almost be the social network attached to your Nintendo mobile games.
Right.
Yep.
But also their mobile plan changed because we were supposed to get 4 games by sometime last year, and now we've only gotten 3 I guess we've gotten 4 now, including Miitomo, but it was supposed to be a much shorter timeline. It took quite a while.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, I think that Nintendo's whole, like, their entire timeline of releases and stuff like that has just constantly been shifting as far as regarding their mobile releases. You know, we saw the launch of Miitomo initially, and then we saw Super Mario Run, which has, you know, been given some support post-launch.
Super Mario Run is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a totally fantastic game, but, you know, it hasn't been, like, they haven't been dripping content in it like they have Fire Emblem Heroes, right? And now that game has been getting a really nice steady stream of support.
And it's been probably making them a lot more money.
Yeah.
I mean, my impression of Miitomo was that it just wasn't for me. It was, you know, that there is an audience. There's an audience out there that'll dig it. Yeah, for me. And also, like Brian, I made the mistake of accepting a ton of friend requests.
Right.
And I think this game definitely succeeds when you know the people very well that you're interacting with. And for me, it just kind of became a chore of answering questions and interacting with people whose usernames I may have seen from my Wii, but didn't know personally. And so it's just kind of like fizzled. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll agree to
that. It was a cool experiment. I loved it. I would love for Nintendo to have like some sort of social network setup that forms the core of their Switch experience.
Right.
You know, that could connect with mobile. So who knows? Maybe we'll see that someday.
I will say that I did make a remarkable likeness of myself in
Yeah. Pretty, it's pretty easy though when you have a beard and glasses.
That's true.
Like if you're like a generic guy like me. Yeah. Like, it's very difficult to create me.
That's what I did. That's what I did. I just, I typed in, generic old, and then that's.
And then I came out, or yeah?
No, they just created the Miitomo.
I think you could make a me, that looked like Pear and me, and the only difference you'd have to make is like, put white hair or brown hair. Yeah, like white, and it would look the same.
What am I, Gandalf?
Yeah.
You shall not.
Gandalf the old.
So wise, Pear. So wise.
Thank you.
All right. Well, yeah, that's the end of segment one. We will be back with part two of our epic episode of NVC to talk way more about Celeste.
Bye. See you later.
This episode is brought to you by Gamefly, the best way to rent or buy your favorite games. It's gotten increasingly difficult to try games before you buy them, but Gamefly lets you take your pick from a library of over 9,000 titles, including the biggest new releases like Super Mario Odyssey, NBA 2K18, Fire Emblem Warriors, and many, many more. Gamefly will ship these games to you, and you can keep them as long as you want. There are no late fees or due dates, and shipping is always free. This breaks down to as little as 54 cents a day. So ask yourself, how many moons can you find in Super Mario Odyssey for 54 cents a day? Oh, and you don't even have to leave the house. The games come right to you. And hey, they rent movies too. Normally, a Gamefly trial lets you only check out one game at a time, but if you head to gamefly.com/voicechat, you can sign up for a free premium 30-day trial that lets you check out two games or movies at a time. Try it out today at gamefly.com/voicechat.
Here we go! And welcome back to part two of Nintendo Voice Chat. And as you may have noticed, we are joined by two new guests, Pear and Jonathan Septout. We are joined with Tom Marks, our PC editor, and Alana Pierce,
Hi.
Our video producer.
Mm-hmm.
Good to have you guys.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you here, Tom.
Always happy to be here.
And we are here to talk about Celeste. We gave Celeste a 10.
Yeah.
You gave Celeste a 10.
I did that.
Why did you give Celeste a 10, Tom?
Cause I really like it a lot.
Yes.
I think it's a
cool
good
game.
It's been a good discussion.
Yeah.
Catch you later.
I mean, it's the third 10 we've given anything in 12 months. And it's
the third
up 10 there.
For Switch?
Yeah. It's up there with Mario and Zelda. So that's pretty insane.
Yeah. I mean, opinions on this will differ, I'm sure, but I enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed Odyssey. Zelda's one of those things where it just like changed the bar, right? Like it.
Not going to compete with that.
Yeah. You like for me, that game is hard to compare anything to, but this is probably in my top 5 or 10 games ever right now. Like this is a game I'm going to be talking about for years to come. It's a game that really kind of touched me both from like a game design standpoint and also from an emotional standpoint, and just like everything about it sort of clicked. And I will also expose my bias for a moment here in saying that like,
oh no, you can't do that on live TL.
But platformers are like my bread and butter. Like I love this type of game. And so this was something that checked every box for me. I had very, very few complaints with the actual game. And then also, I just think it did something really special. Like,
I'm laughing because whoever recorded this gameplay is so much better than me.
Yeah. I think this was me, if this is the video I'm thinking
of. Oh, man.
But, no, this is me, actually.
Watching. Oh, this is you?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
I thought I was about to get, like, totally burned there.
No, there's, like, a part that you just, like, breeze through. that I destroyed me. This pot, man. Oof.
I think I told the story on maybe the last episode, but I first previewed this game at the Nindies event in February of 2017, and watching somebody play at like a pro level, watching somebody play like the B-sides when they've obviously the guy giving me the demo was a designer on the game, is like watching somebody conduct a symphony. Like, it's amazing to watch somebody fly through this game. So yeah, I think it's in terms of like just take the actual game itself, like, out of the equation for a minute and consider, like, what the speedrun community will look like in 3 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. It's gonna be insane.
Yeah. This game is totally, I mean, it's built for speedrunning. It has, obviously, like, a speedrunning counter in there that you can enable.
Yeah, neither. What's going on here?
Wow. Yeah, so this
is a later chapter.
This is, like, what would you say, halfway through the game?
No, this is farther than that. This is the second to last chapter of the story of the game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there aren't any real spoilers here. No story spoilers.
Just
level spoilers.
Yeah. But this is all stuff that they've shown in trailers and stuff. It's like they've been pretty liberal with showing what the game has to offer.
No, absolutely. I think, like, just taking a look at Celeste from what we've seen in screenshots, or if you've caught a trailer of it, it might look a little bit smaller than what it actually turns out to be, because it's a huge game, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot to play there, because each level has, for instance, like, one way to play through it, but then there are B-sides to other levels,
right?
Yeah,
there's tons of hidden stuff as well.
There's so many secrets. The basics of that is there's these strawberries. There's 175 strawberries hidden throughout all the A-sides of the game, which are the base chapters. There are 8 chapters, and then every chapter has a B-side tape that, once you find it on the A-side, it unlocks that, and it's – the B-side is like a version of the same chapter, but – just, like, turned up to 11 in difficulty. It's just
How are the A-sides not already turned up to 11? It's one of the hardest games I've ever played.
Yeah. So the A-sides are kind of balanced to be very challenging, but, like, eventually achievable. The B-sides are going to be the type of thing where, like, there are going to be people who just don't want to play them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're just that hard.
There's this game called I Want to Be the Guy.
Yeah.
You've played that?
Yeah.
That's what it makes me think of, where mm-hmm. it's like, this is mean in a way that I'm laughing at it because it hates me. It's just like, you're laughing in a way that's like, haha, wow, you suck. And it's just, like, infuriating, whereas I feel like normally it's kind of like Super Meat Boy style.
Yeah, the only difference is that from I Want to Be the Guy being that I Want to Be the Guy does a lot of stuff with, like, tricking you.
Yeah.
And this game doesn't try to do that. It's more transparent in that regard. But you're right that it's just like, there are some jumps in, like, the really, really end game B-side levels that are, you know, probably like a 3 to 4 pixel tolerance in terms of getting through them. Like, it's
that makes
nuts.
Me sweat just thinking.
Yeah. But I do really like that the way that you approach every, I want to call them rooms, is, you know, you get there, you look at it, and you're like, this is a puzzle. It's not just a platform.
Right.
This is a puzzle in itself. How am I going to get over there? And every single time I'm thinking about it. Yeah.
Alana and I were actually texting about Celeste last night, and she texted this thing that was like, I had literally said out loud multiple times playing it, in that you walk into a room, and you look at the way that the layout works, and you think, oh, this is impossible. Like, there's no way to get through this. But then 45 seconds to a minute later, you're on the other side of that chasm, and you're like, I'm not even sure how I did that, but it worked. Like, I made it.
Yeah.
And that feeling is what is so addictive about this game. And, like, you know, like, you had compared it to Meat Boy, which I think is probably the most apt comparison. I think, personally, I think it's harder than Meat Boy, which
I do
probably
too,
weed a lot of people out, like, just from the get-go. But the same thing about Meat Boy, the same thing that I love about Meat Boy is something that I love about Celeste, is that they don't give you an opportunity to give up, right? Mm. Like, you die, and then before you can even set your Switch down and be like, you know, F this game, you're already back in it. And so that sort of instant respawn, that sort of instant feedback, just encourages you to keep going, because it's like, well, I'm already back up, I might as well give it another
shot. It's also that the rooms are small. So you get spawned right back at the start of one, rather than being, like, really far back. So it never feels like it's punishing you too hard.
There's a couple of rooms.
Travels.
There's a couple of rooms that I've been through that I'm like, I wish I didn't have to do this portion of this again.
Yeah.
It really sucks.
Yeah, that was something that you mentioned that got under your skin that I think is totally fair, is, like, occasionally there will be those rooms that are, like, a little bit longer, and, like, it's not the first jump, it's not the second jump, it's, like, the third thing you gotta do is, like, mm-hmm. the hardest in the room, and suddenly you're doing the first two over and over and over again.
Well, and it's, like, the same thing, like, the same sort of feedback loop as Dark Souls, in that, like, I know that I compare everything to Dark Souls, I'm sorry, but in that it'll work times 1 through 5, and then on the 6th time, you'll just die there for no reason. And you're like, what did I do differently there? Mm-hmm. Like, why did I do that? And then you figure it out, like, later. Like, oh, I just didn't. I was just a fraction of a hair off in the angle that I needed to jump, and I hit the spikes, or, you know.
Yeah. It can be really tough. But I also wanted to talk, we could talk about the gameplay forever, because it's very, very good. But I think the writing is also very good.
Yeah.
So the characters are all really interesting.
This is the. If we're going to get right down to it, this is the part of the game that made me give it a 10. Like, this is the part of the game that made it, that set itself apart for me, did something new for me. It's this incredible platformer, right? Like, we've just talked about that. But the story, the writing is great. The story is told amazingly genuinely, and it's a story that's not – that you're not going to expect from a game like this. It's a story about like dealing with – basically dealing with depression and dealing with parts of yourselves that are – that like you might be afraid of. And the message of the game is ultimately like learning to understand those parts of yourself is better than running away from them. And like that's incredible to me because this is like the type of story and the type of conversations being had within it that like – you'd expect from like a walking simulator or like a visual novel. Like, you know, I think of Depression Quest as like one of those games that like really took depression on the nose. And like, that's an amazing game, but I don't necessarily think I'd call that like a fun game. Not that that's a bad thing.
Right.
Right. Like, I don't think a game has to be fun to be good, but like, this is a game that was like, well, why can't we talk about depression in a genuine way and also make an incredibly fun, satisfying game around that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think that dying 1,200 times in one room will teach you a lot about depression.
Well, it does. Yeah. I mean, it does take some pretty serious subjects like depression and anxiety, and it sort of like formulates them and it explains them and teaches you how to deal with them through this sort of lighthearted game in a way.
It's never heavy-handed.
Right, exactly.
And jokes and stuff too.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. And like, I really like what you had mentioned a few days ago when you were telling me about Celeste. You were saying how like, you know, some games like The Witness or other like quote unquote walking simulators might, you know, have a great story, but the gameplay isn't as like, you know, it's not as addictive as Celeste is, but it's able to achieve both things.
Yeah, I think The Witness
is going to be like, The Witness, the story's terrible. Not a great example.
But what about that audio tape with the girl?
That was excellent.
Perhaps you're forgetting that.
Well, but something like Edith Finch, maybe, right?
Right, yeah. Edith Finch. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, just I love the fact that Celeste accomplishes both addictive gameplay and has an amazing story, you know, on top of it.
Well, I think one of the things that it does so smart is that the gameplay in itself is an analogy for the overall story that it's telling.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
You throw yourself at something 100 times to try to figure out why, and there might not be a right answer or a right way to approach it. And like that sort of, you know, Tom was telling me that there's moments in this game that like a light bulb goes off for you where it's just like, oh, now I understand something about this that I didn't before. And I feel like that's the thing that like keeps me coming back to it. Because I, you know, it is incredibly difficult. And there are times when I'm just like, you know what? I'm over this game, but something in the back of my head is like, I kind of want to see what happens.
I dreamt about it last night.
Yeah. Well, you're weird. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
But, so I do want to touch on this because I imagine that a lot of people are listening to this and watching this and going like, well, that's great, but like, I'm never going to play this game because I'm not a masochist, right? Like, I don't want to subject myself to that. And something that it does really well is it has an assist mode. And also, if you don't care about the story, you can skip every cutscene. You can just do the platformer. That's great. And the game doesn't really punish you or make fun of you for doing that. And similarly, it has an assist mode that you can turn on where it says very clearly when you select the option in the menus, like, hey, this isn't the way the game's meant to be played. This game is meant to be challenging. It's, as you said, it's part of the game. And, you know, but we understand that not everyone's going to be into that, and we still want you to be able to experience it. And if you turn on the assist mode, it lets you do one of four different things. You can either have more dashes, be completely invincible, have infinite stamina, which is usually when you're climbing walls, you'll slide down eventually. And then the last thing is my favorite, you can slow the gameplay down. And so you can slow it up to half speed, but it goes in 10% increments.
Okay.
So if you're really struggling and you're just like, I can't get a handle on this game, you could just turn it down to a 90% speed, 80% speed, and it's like still a hard game. It's still got all of the mechanical requirements there. You just have a few milliseconds more to think about what you're doing.
That's really cool.
And suddenly the game is like still very challenging and cool, but just a little bit more doable.
I can see that being extremely useful because like the thing that is difficult to me is running a room in succession or running, like making sure that each of those movements is lined up. Cause it's oftentimes what will happen is like, I need to jump into one thing and then like hold the directional stick this way. So I pop out and then jump up and then jump over. Mm-hmm. And so like having that additional handful of milliseconds to make those decisions is awesome.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I haven't tried the assist mode. I definitely think I'll mess with the double jump though.
Yeah. Yeah, because, most often screw up by, dashing in the wrong direction because I'm in a rush.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, I dashed across instead of slightly up. And that happens a lot. And I feel like that would kind of help with that.
Yeah.
I'm not at a point where I hate it yet, that enough to tone it down. But I think that that's like great for accessibility. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And once again, I'll let you talk because I've been talking forever and I just am crazy about this game. But like, yeah, I love the feeling the game does it with is, and it never punishes you. It never makes fun of you. It never, like Super Meat Boy, I think you brought this up actually a while back. Like you, Meat Boy is like a punishing game and then it like rubs your face in it. And it's like, watch all your deaths. Here you go. And like, Celeste has these little in between chapters things where it's like, you know, dying is okay. Like, don't fear your death count. It's all right. Like, you can do this. And it's like such an encouraging game.
Yeah. Also the music.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's why like a game like this is so esteemed is that we have like also this is really good. Like it's like just all of the pieces are very good. I can't say if I would give it a 10 because I haven't finished it, but it's just a lot of very, very good things interweaved really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's always a disclaimer. Whenever we talk about games that we give a 10, on the IGN scale, a 10 is a masterpiece. And I think what a lot of people interpret a 10 out of 10 as is, oh, this game is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm of the mindset that no game is perfect, mm-hmm. but a lot of games in my book are masterpieces.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing that people need to take into account when they go into something like this or even something like Zelda or Mario where we've given it a 10. That doesn't necessarily mean that the game is 100% top down, like perfect, you know?
Also doesn't mean all of the staff necessarily agree with it.
That's true too.
Yeah. It's just one person, ultimately.
Marty Sliva told me he would have given Mario Odyssey an 8.5.
I probably would have also.
And now I'm not friends with either of them.
I gave a 10. Yeah. Sorry.
I'd probably be more in the 7 range for Mario Act. No.
Is that true?
No.
Whoa.
No.
What are you doing here?
I was shocked. I was like, oh, boy.
No.
Okay, we
good. The balls on you to say that on a Nintendo show. Just insane.
Yeah. No, I only give 10s to indie hipster trash.
Mm.
Yeah, well.
And pixel art games, specifically.
Known SJW, Tom Marks, on the panel today.
Yes. I've actually never given a 10.
No?
This is Tom's first 10.
I'm not planning on making a habit of it.
Yeah.
But also, you gotta remember that I came from a background at PC Gamer where, like,
it was illegal to give 10s.
Yeah, the 100 didn't exist. They've never given a game a 99 or 100 ever. Yeah. So, like, I come from a background where that wasn't possible, basically. Yeah. But yeah, I don't plan on making a habit of it. This game just really struck me in a powerful, powerful way that I have not been struck since, I mean, so this is an annoying thing about saying something like that is like I haven't been struck like that since Breath of the Wild.
I know.
But before that,
I keep
a
doing
long
that.
Time.
I haven't felt this way since Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, my bad. Never mind.
It's like so totally reset the bar and I'm
yeah.
just like, dang it, man.
But I also wanted to say the thing that sold me on it when you started playing it was that it's from the creators of Towerfall.
Yeah.
Play that awesome game. So it kind of checks out why it's so good.
And it kind of feels like a comparison that I originally had, and it's a lot more than this, but it feels a little bit like Towerfall mixed with Meat Boy, right? It's like the platforming of Towerfall with that
delicious meat.
That delicious, delicious meat.
Right.
No, strawberries, man. It's all strawberries. You make a pie at
really
the end.
Really bad at getting the strawberries.
A second question this episode. You guys weren't here for the first one, but yeah, I was just going to say, am I playing it wrong if I don't give a if I don't care about getting the strawberries?
No.
Because there are so many times where I see a strawberry in a room and I'm like,
nah, I just
no way.
So this is another way that the game lets you choose your difficulty, right? Is a lot of the strawberries are completely optional. A lot of the rooms they're in are like completely optional. I think it's the fourth or fifth level that's the temple. I think it's the fifth chapter. Like most of the strawberries and most honestly of the platforming sections in that chapter are side paths. Like you could completely skip them. And that's another way that it's built for speedrunning, right? Like, man, there are going to be so many different categories of speedruns for this game. Mm. There's going to be the any percent. There's going to be the all strawberries. There's going to be the only B-sides. There's going to be no deaths. There's going to be – I've heard rumor. I don't know if this is true yet. I still have to confirm. But apparently the game is beatable without dashing is what I have been told. I don't know if that's
Jonathan
true.
Told me there's another category. Jonathan was talking about the no jump or the no dash run when he was here a minute ago.
It I don't see how that's impossible.
I can't even
I know.
Comprehend
I've,
it.
I got about halfway through the first chapter before I got stuck on a jump. And like, there's little tricks though. Like, there's so much nuance to the game. Like, if you're just on a wall and you have to like jump over spikes on the top of the wall or whatever, just jumping won't get you as far as if you hop and then immediately jump off the wall again. Like, there's all these little tricks. There's a trick where if you
mean like if you let go of the wall and then you?
No, you like, you tap jump just a little bit and then as you fall back down, you grab onto the wall and immediately jump again. You just get a little more momentum.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's the same thing with like bouncing off a pink cloud or bouncing off of one of not levers, but one of the pulley systems.
Yeah.
Like, You can bounce off of those and it'll shoot you across the room. But if you time it just right, it'll shoot you all the way so that you're totally in the safe zone to catch yourself. And it's getting that rhythm down that I think is probably going to be so key in a lot of these like speed runs or special runs, you know?
There's a movement mechanic that the B-side of the final chapter of the story introduces, and that the B-side of the final chapter of the story took me over 2.5 hours and 1,400 deaths to beat.
Wow.
It was one of the most satisfying things I've ever done in a video game. It was – there were three different parts during it, three different screens or rooms where I walked into it and I tried it a couple times and I went, this is physically impossible to do.
Right.
And then probably 10 to 15 minutes later I managed to do it, right? Like there was one level and – but as I was saying, about – 2 hours into that, no, probably like hour and a half into that, they introduce you to a new, like, mechanic. It's not like – it's never been hidden from you. It's not like an ability you get. It's just a trick where if you dash at a wall and jump right in this specific way, you get more height. And then every puzzle after it in that chapter uses it. And, like, you're doing things where, like, you'll be on a cliff and there will be just, like, a straight wall and then an up, and you like have to figure out how to do that, and right. It's just amazing.
The way you're talking about it is making me think of playing, you know, Trials.
Yeah.
Expert. Like you play it on the hottest difficulties, and you're just like, how am I supposed to get up that straight wall? And it's just like incredibly hot, and you press retry over and over again until there's 1,000 of them until you finally get them, and it's super satisfying.
Yeah.
All right, so I just have one more question
before
we move on. So given the fact that this game is very difficult, but it does have an assist mode in it, would you say that this is a game that everybody should pick up? Everyone should try it.
I think everyone should try it because there are so many different ways to kind of customize it to yourself. Like, like we were saying with those strawberries, like even if you don't want to put the assist mode on, but you just don't want to go after the strawberries, like that's another way to kind of make the game a little easier on yourself. I'd really recommend it to pretty much everyone. I'd especially recommend it to anybody who has struggled with things like depression or anxiety. I think it is a very healthy game to play for that sort of thing.
Awesome. Very, very cool. Well, Celeste is officially out. We gave it a 10. So if you're interested in it, we highly recommend you check it out. But moving on from there, we have some news coming in from Psyonix. It looks like cross-platform parties are officially coming to Rocket League at some point this year. So Psyonix is clearly not planning on dropping support for Rocket League on Switch anytime soon, because they recently announced that a cross-party platform system will be showing up, allowing players from different consoles to play together in the same party seamlessly moving between matches. So I still play a lot of Rocket League, especially since it launched on Switch. Now when it did launch on Switch, I turned off cross-play right off the bat. Yeah, because I didn't want to like play against Xbox people or anything like that. Not because it's like they're any better or anything like that. I just felt like the core group of people jumping.
It's because you're a console racist.
Yeah, it's because I'm a console racist. Yeah. Totally a console racist. No. No, but just because I felt like, you know, playing with people on the same console, everyone's experiencing it together for the first time. They'll probably all suck like I suck. So yeah. It'd be great.
Totally.
Yeah. But I just think that it's great that, you know, this, like, Psyonix is sort of like leading the way for like cross-platform
play. I think
play.
They are in a lot of ways. I think Psyonix is an incredible company when it comes to multiplayer. Their leaderboard tournament system is amazing. It basically they have their own tournament system built in to cross-platform where you can 8.0.
All right.
Nice.
Where you can I guess this is footage from our review. You can choose to start a leaderboard within the game itself. You can have certain things that you're placing as bets, and then everyone who's playing online will be like, okay, this is a leaderboard for people interested in this map on this console. They all have like a countdown timer, so you all get called into the lobby when it's time to play, and then a tournament starts. And it's like,
that's really cool.
That is insane. As someone who like played games competitively and had to go to third party websites to fill everything in, the fact that you can do that with all those filters, like they're incredible. And this is a thing that the only company that's missing is Sony, and Psyonix are a great one to put the pressure on, them being that Rocket League's success ultimately came from being a PS Plus title.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're amazing.
We had Jeremy Dunham on an episode of NVC, I think it was before your time here, a few months back, to talk about Rocket League coming to the Switch. And he talked a lot about like the architecture and like the backdoor stuff that happens to get a game cross-platform like that just out of the gate. Super interesting interview. If you missed that episode, I encourage you to go back and listen to it, because there's a lot of insight into like the inner workings of this kind of stuff. And it's nice to see that Psyonix is continuing to support this platform. So. That's really cool.
Yeah. I also just love that Psyonix like don't take no guff when it comes to all the cross-platform.
He was wearing
stuff.
A t-shirt that said "Don't take no guff."
Amazing. Yeah, yeah. No, but like, stuff. You know, there's always that stuff about like
the back.
But like the Fortnite thing where like it accidentally got turned
on. Okay, but that platform. Was a wink like, and a nod. Like,
right.
That
right.
was very much like, oh, whoops. Hey.
Oh, hey, I have zero doubt they did that intentionally.
Oh, of course they did.
Of course. Yeah. But like at the same time, they had to turn it off and they had to like issue a statement on all that. And like Psyonix has just been like quietly like, yeah, Sony's still not part of that, but like Psyonix has just been quietly like, yeah, we're just going to do this and like not really make a big deal out of it.
Do a great job of it.
Yeah.
The way they make it work and the fact that you can turn it off if you want to and filter it out in the tournaments, filter it out in multiplayer. Like it's just, it's so well made. I really think this studio, like despite making a fantastic game, doesn't get enough credit for their multiplayer architecture. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
Totally.
Huge success.
Well, further in the news, Atari is back in the limelight. Needless to say, I guess Roller Coaster Tycoon is apparently seeking crowdfunding for a Switch version. Now, Atari, not too long ago, started a crowdfunding campaign for something called the Atari Box. Yes. So,
where's that?
I want to know why. Like, yes.
Hey,
one, where's that?
Where's that at?
Two, why is Atari, like, why are they seeking crowdfunding opportunities? Like, I feel like Atari is a company that could potentially just kind of drive their own horse, you know what I mean? Or ride their own horse. They could
You could have said the same for Shenmue. Like, it's like, there's so many weird, and Star Citizen is like still so successful as a crowdsourced game, but it's, I don't know, I think it's, they are a publisher trying to come back and figure out what they're doing. Like, I feel like it is a really weird choice, but it's ultimately viable for them because they don't have a ton of stuff left. Like, their company's changed so dramatically that it's like, what even are they? What is their company?
Well, I know they had big placement in Blade Runner this year last year.
They did have some of that.
Where's that Blade Runner money? Why not put that in there?
Yeah. Well, the platform that they're using, it's called Start Engine. So it's a little different than like Kickstarter or what you'd get from like Indiegogo. So what they're looking for, something between $10,000 and $1.07 million to make this game. It's a pretty wide window right there.
Just that depends on how many roller coasters you get in the game.
True. Yeah. For 1,000, it's just one.
Yeah.
I think the other reason they're going for crowdfunding is because they probably, from a business standpoint, are trying to gauge if there's any consumer faith left in the Roller Coaster Tycoon brand because they destroyed it all with Roller Coaster Tycoon World.
Yeah.
Like, just to be completely blunt, they released a really buggy, broken game and didn't really do anything, and like, God.
The iPhone game has been, the mobile game has been super successful, which I think is just called Roller Coaster Tycoon.
I think it's called Roller Coaster Tycoon Touch or something like that.
Yeah.
It's the same developer. So this is the one thing that is like making me hopeful at all about this, is that it is the same developer who made that, supposedly going to be making the Switch version. But like, they told us so little, like the Kickstarter, the Start Engine backer video or whatever it is, the pitch video is like, so businessy and full of so many businessy buzzwords about like,
well, that's
we're a global developer and we develop global products.
This is not a stakeholder meeting. This is a separate thing.
And
we've got
zero
view on all the roller coasters.
Right? And through that, there's zero gameplay of anything, any zero like concept art, any sort of like, what are you selling us, right? Like, what are you trying to get us to back? And
okay,
it made me really nervous.
I totally want to play this. I totally want Roller Coaster Tycoon on the Switch.
There's the optimistic side of it, right? It's like, yeah, I want that to work, but
it's a genre that's sorely lacking, that sort of like semi kind of like park builder or, I mean,
there was one on Scream something on Xbox, Zoo Tycoon.
I mean,
like
I'm talking
Xbox
like just on the Switch. There's the, the Portal Bridge Builder.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But outside of that, like there's not a ton of options for that kind of like sim experience on Switch.
It was like Farming Simulator.
Yeah, but that's a whole farm thing, you know? You gotta do a tractor.
It's a whole farm.
Like
you gotta go get the wheat.
Ice Road Trucking Simulator.
Is that true?
That's a game that exists on PC, specifically for Ice Road Trucks.
Okay.
I'd like to see like speed tires.
That's a niche.
It's a niche level of trucking.
It's incredible. It's amazing. But I feel like the like Tycoon games, like maybe you're more in touch with this, Tom, but I feel like I haven't seen a ton of them just in general lately, even on PC.
Planet Coaster has been the biggest, right? Like that's the one that really, really took off. And there's a new one coming from the creators of Theme Hospital. There's a hospital tycoon game coming. Also a weird trend that happened is there's been like two or three airport tycoon games that have come up, like just out of the indie scene on Steam Early Access.
Like if you fail, do the planes just crash?
I don't know. I really don't. But Yeah, I would love to see them make their way to Switch. Like, I'd love to see Planet Coaster on Switch. I'd love to see this on Switch and have it be successful. Like, I'd really want this to be a great thing. I'm just super skeptical right now.
The way they're presenting it is a little iffy. Like, they don't have any, like, footage or even concepts to really show us. But I do think it's interesting that they're, like, since they're using Start Engine, it's a little bit of a different platform. So they're allowed to basically promise their investors revenue share and, you know, allowing them to work on future projects with them in Atari. So it's different from Kickstarter in that, like, aspect. But at the same time, the people who they should be pitching this to are fans of the series, right, not, like, potential investors. I think something like this probably would perform a lot better on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, because those are the people who want to play the game.
Maybe,
right?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Very well could be.
Very interesting stuff happening in Atari. But before we wrap up the show, let's quickly go through some of the new game releases for this week. Out this week is Chroma Gun, which is kind of like an interesting Portal-esque type game. I've played a little bit of it, not too much, but definitely check that game out if you're a fan of, like, Portal-like games, but don't go in there expecting Portal. Shoe is out on January 23rd, or came out. Yep. Super One More Jump, Lost Sphere, Zigzag Go, Zero Gunner 2, Strikers 1945 2, Dust Off Heli Rescue, Celeste, Atomic Run Gun Jump, and of course, Pokemon Crystal Version out on 3DS.
Now hang on a second, I have to correct you here. I believe the name of this game is Atomic Run Gun Jump Gun.
What did I say? Run Gun Jump?
Yeah.
Oh.
But you have to say it like you have
one
word. You have to say it like
America.
That.
I know.
Run Gun Jump Gun.
Yeah, forget the guns.
Run Gun, Run, Gun Jump Gun.
Yeah, see?
That's tough.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
the Celeste yeah. of words.
It's the Celeste of words. Yeah.
You see it and you like think that you can get there, but it just feels impossible.
You cannot.
Before we wrap it up, we got a really, really good question in for Question Block.
Okay.
I think. This one comes in from our email, nvc@ign.com. It's from Ryan. Ryan says, "Hello, NVC. I am one of your loyal listeners who does not own a Switch. I usually stay a generation behind in my gaming to save money. Last year, I purchased a new 3DS XL. Because of my tight schedule, my gaming now happens while commuting on the train. I downloaded Shovel Knight and loved it. I would never have found that game if I wasn't a listener of NVC. I've also played and enjoyed The Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds, Super Mario 3D Land, Animal Crossing, and Luigi's Mansion: Dark Moon. However, the tightrope sections of Dark Moon were completely unplayable unless the train was stopped at a station.
Yeah.
What are three other must-have 3DS games for the train? Thanks, Ryan."
Okay. So I want to throw one that isn't necessarily that popular, but that's Phoenix Wright versus Professor Layton. I think it's the other way around, Professor Layton versus Ace Attorney. I think that's a really compelling, interesting story puzzle game that you can play for a super long time. And it's like, if you haven't played any of the Phoenix Wright games, you should totally play them. But that's like probably my favorite of both of those separate franchises, which have tons of games on the 3DS as well. So I'm going to nominate that.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I think I'm cheating a little bit here when I say that use a lot of the Virtual Console stuff on the 3DS. There's a
ton
of
correct to cheating.
Yeah, there's a ton of Super Nintendo games that I really love. Like, I played Earthbound for the first time on my 3DS. Super Metroid is great on 3DS. So I would say that those are where I would go for train wise play. But if you're looking for strictly 3DS games, you gotta go with Samus Returns. Like, I think out of this list, it looks like you're playing all the, like, bangers, like the first party, like, real big Nintendo games. And if that's the case, then just be a completionist and get Samus Returns. It's a really, really good game, really tough, really long. And, I think it's totally worth your money and worth a visit on the train. So.
And no tightrope sections. So.
There's that one.
That one tightrope section. Yeah.
I want to say as a fellow, train gamer, I empathize with this letter a lot. I'd say anything Fire Emblem, like, is my call. Like, I actually really like the Fire Emblem. I can't remember the name now because I'm totally blanking, but the one right before Fates.
Awakenings.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Awakenings is just like,
yeah, Fire,
one of the best Fire Emblem.
Awakenings is a great game. And that
is it Awakenings with an S?
It's Awakenings with a Z, like the Dragon Ball Fighter game. Awakenings.
I've just been saying Awakening this whole time.
I thought it was singular actually.
I think it is.
Too,
yeah.
Maybe. Either way.
I'm sure that the comments will let me know.
Yeah.
I was like, is it Awakenings? Have I been screwing this up this whole time? But yes, that is an excellent game.
Yeah. And if that's also an older one. If you play a little further behind, it's probably a little cheaper than the newer ones, and it's still amazing.
Hey, yeah. Seriously, don't at me if it's plural.
Sorry.
My pick was going to be Samus Returns. That's like probably my most recent favorite.
How did you pick that one?
I know. I said it was.
You only lost the three.
I'm sorry.
Was going to be, but I would also say A Link Between Worlds too.
That was going to be my go-to, but he listed it. Yeah.
Oh dang! Yeah. All right. Well, good thing I have you guys.
He's just got it covered. It's fine.
I mean, it's funny because like, if I were to make a list of the must-play games on 3DS, it's literally this list.
I agree.
Yeah. So
show some good ones for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. All right. Well, that's our show this week. Thank you all so much for watching and listening. We're a weekly show on IGN.com, but you can also find us on YouTube and any of your favorite podcasting listening services. So definitely subscribe if you haven't already. Tom, where can people find you at?
At Tom R. Marks on Twitter and nowhere else, pretty much.
Cool.
Alana, where can people find you?
I am at Charalanazad on all of the things. That's just my name in the middle of Charizard.
Cool. And Zach?
It's incredibly difficult to spell.
It is. That's why I give
it sounds so easy, but it's so hard to spell when you...
Alana. Zod.
I don't know how to spell your name. You can find me at Zacharias D on Twitter. I also run, the NBC podcast, Twitter sometimes.
Cool.
Occasionally.
Nice.
So I'm there sometimes. And, you can find me every week right here on NBC.
Cool. And you can find me You can find me on Twitter at Philip Musin and here every week on NBC as well. Thank you guys very much and we'll see you next week.
Get the thing.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.